The following program is rated U for universal audiences and is considered suitable for listeners of all ages.
This is a presentation of Dream Realm Enterprises, where dreams are our reality.
To Q Who. This is the quintessential Whovian podcast. I'm your host, John Russell, and this is 218. And today we will finish our look at season 2 of Doctor Who, my watch through and listen through, because I've been watching the episodes and I've been listening to the audiobooks in televised or chronological order, however you want to look at it, as best I can, because obviously they've not all come out at once, and there have been a couple of Hartnells that have been released more recently. So I am starting today with the Space Museum. So the Space Museum is one of those stories. It's kind of a slow crawl. It's not really considered one of the better Doctor Who's. I've always kind of had a soft spot for it because I think the concept is really interesting. It just kind of doesn't get going. It starts pretty good. You got a really good first episode, and then it's just like from there, it seems like it just kind of loses its way a little bit and you get kind of bogged down in the stuff that's going on this planet Xeros or whatever it's called. And you've got this militaristic group that apparently it's not their planet. They've just set up their space museum there. I've never understood, and it wasn't explained in the story. And listening to the book, it wasn't explained in the book either exactly why they were there. I mean, it explains in the book that, you know, it's kind of like the Horns of Nymon situation, where it's a race that were kind of conquering race, but they've seen better times. They're now kind of in a decline, and so they've got, to me, they're misfit military members on this planet, looking after the Space Museum, which doesn't make any sense anyway. Why is the military looking after a space museum? It's not even a case that the Space Museum features like their military ships and items. It's a collection of stuff from all over the universe, apparently. So it kind of doesn't make any sense from the get-go in that regard. And then you've got these teenagers that are the natives of the planet who are wanting to rebel, but they don't know how. But at the same time, they're still wanting to rebel and planning to rebel somehow, but they have absolutely no plan. And it takes a teenage girl in Vicky to come along and actually help to make that happen. So spoilers on that, if anybody's not seen or read the Space Museum, that's pretty much the plot. It started out, like I said, episode one was pretty interesting because it started out with this idea of the TARDIS crew kind of jumping a track, and sort of they get there before they actually arrive. Nobody can see them or hear them or anything, but they can see what's going on, and they can see, you know, what happened after they arrived, and that they've been captured and put in on display in the museum for some reason. And they're trying to prevent that from happening. So that's an interesting concept, but they just kind of didn't follow through with it. And so we get caught up in this whole revolution of the Xerons trying to rebel against these these middle-aged soldiers that have no business calling themselves soldiers to begin with because they're so inept. So, yeah, it kind of loses its way. It's an interesting idea. There's some interesting ideas in here. There's some fun to be had. It's kind of a light story. And Hartnell is pretty much, he's pretty much having a good time, you can tell. So it's worth a view, but it's not the most amazing story. It really isn't. So I can only give it 2.5 TARDISes for the episodes. The audiobook was a little bit better because they do explain things a little bit more, or the novelization, I should say. It was kind of interesting hearing it. So there's a little more meat on the bone. We get a few things explained. They did change some of the things in there, not necessarily for the better, because the bit where Vicky and the teenagers break into the armory, they changed that and they actually made it easier for her to get into the armory. And it didn't really make that much sense to begin with, but in the televised version, at least there is a reason why Vicky's able to reprogram the computer to let them in. But in the novelization, it doesn't quite work that way. It just sort of lets them in. I mean, it just, she doesn't do anything overly special. So that they kind of messed up. But as far as the audiobook itself is concerned, they did fill in a little bit of information about the military and so forth and all that. So we get a little more background information, but so it makes it's a much better read than it was a view. So I will give the audiobook 3 TARDISes out of 5. All right, moving on quickly to the chase. This is a classic story, of course. The Daleks, of course, chasing the Doctor and company through time and space. And, yeah, it's kind of, to me, it's sort of, a lot of the ideas that are in the chase sort of set up the ideas in the Daleks' master plan. And I guess that's just Terry Nation, as he tends to write, kind of revisiting some of his earlier ideas. So some of his ideas from the chase do appear again in the Daleks' master plan. But I've always rather enjoyed the chase. It's sort of structured similarly to the Keys of Marinus, which is also a Terry Nation script. And because you've got this going from place to place, you know, in Keys of Marinus, they're on the search for the keys. But in this one, of course, they're trying to keep away from the Daleks, or keep one step ahead of the Daleks so that the Daleks don't come and exterminate them. And, yeah, kind of as it is with the Keys of Marinus, the first couple of episodes just kind of plod along a bit slowly, but the real guts of the story are in the rest of it, you know, in the middle and the end. The middle couple of episodes are really interesting because that's when the real chase is going on. And then they finally end up on the planet Mechanus, where, of course, they come in contact with the Mechanoids. And we see this big battle between the Mechanoids and the Daleks. So, yeah, it's an enjoyable romp, the chase. I've always really enjoyed it. Some of the early scenes are really cool, too. Once they get to the planet Iridius on that desert planet and you see the, like, fish people or whatever, that to me has always been the most boring part of the entire story, and probably the part that works the least well. It just doesn't work as well as the rest of the story, but I do like when they're going through time and they're ending up in different destinations, like they end up on the Mary Celeste, they end up on top of the Empire State Building in New York. And where they meet, of course, I can't remember the guy's first name, but Dill, I think, is his last name. And he was played by Peter Purvis, who a couple episodes later becomes Steven, the new companion. But the book itself actually goes into a little more detail with that character, that country bumpkin Dill. actually gives a little more background for him and lets us know what his ultimate fate was, because, you know, if you've seen the story, then you know that after the Daleks leave and these people come up, they see him going on and on about, you know, things disappearing and weird creatures, and they just think he's nuts. Well, apparently he got put away in a mental institution for that. But it gives a little more background into his, you know, who he was, his backstory, and what happens to him, which is interesting. So that's an interesting aspect of it. So the book kind of does fill in some gaps in there. Doesn't always succeed, but for the most part, it fills in some gaps nicely. And it's very faithful, of course, a very faithful adaptation of the story. So I give the televised story 4 TARDISes, and I give the audiobook 4 TARDISes as well. And as here we come to the final story of Season 2, which I think is the best story of Season 2. It's one of my favorite Hartnells, period. It's definitely in the top 5. It's the story, The Time Meddler. And it features, of course, the meddling monk, played by Peter Butterworth, brilliantly. It's always been one of those favorites of mine, because just the whole tone of it is good. It's kind of like a fun romp. It's another one similar to the Romans in that way, that it's a fun romp. It's not all played for laughs, but there's a certain amount of humor in it. There are some very dark aspects in the story as well. Probably the darkest stuff we've ever seen in Doctor Who, because we have this Viking invasion, and they send a patrol in to this village, and you actually have a character getting brutalized, getting raped, and even though it's never actually said on screen, and certainly not shown, but you know what's going on. You definitely know what's going on in the story, that's what happens to her. And when I first watched that, the first impression I got was that they killed her, and then we find out later she's alive and she's just been in shock. But that was an oddity for what was a family show, or at that time more considered a children's show. So it's kind of odd that was in there. It's still an odd choice, and I'm really surprised, even though, like I said, it's never actually stated what happens to her. Certainly the adults knew what was happening to her. And you just kind of wonder, were there awkward questions from the kids when they saw this to their parents as to what's going on here? So that was a bit odd for a Doctor Who period to sort of play around with that subject matter at all. But it is a really good story. You get past that, and there's just this, you know, a lot of fun trying to stop the monk. And this is also one of those stories where William Hartnell takes a week off, so there's an entire episode without the Doctor. He's locked up in a cell and asleep for an episode. So Stephen and Vicky get to really shine, and Stephen gets dropped in at the deep end immediately, and he has to show his worth quite early. That's a character that they had to develop fast, and it works. You know, it works. Stephen and Vicky as the leads in an episode actually held up very well, and I liked that pairing. I've always liked Stephen and Vicky. I think they worked really well as a pairing in the TARDIS, and I really wish that they'd have kept Vicky around for a lot longer. And she was certainly better than some of the other companions that they came up with after she left, like Katarina and Dodo. So it would have been nice if she would have stayed at least through the War Machines and gotten a proper exit in that one. So it was... I always liked Vicky, and I really liked her paired with Steven. And in this story, they shine. They really do. The story shines. I'm not going to give you too much details about the story itself, because you probably know it. And if you don't know it, you should watch it because it's definitely one of the better Hartnells, and it's probably one of the easier ones to come in on if you've never seen a 60s story or a Hartnell story. It'd probably be a really good one to start with because everything's laid out. And it's also a point where the philosophy of the show kind of changes, because before this, it was kind of always stated that you couldn't change history. And it was really, you know, that point was really pushed home in the Aztecs in the previous season, where Barbara wanted to change history, but the doctor was telling her, you know, it can't be done, basically. Not that you shouldn't do it necessarily, but that it can't be done. And that was kind of the philosophy of the show up to that point. And I think that was kind of Verity Lambert's idea of the Doctor Who universe and how it worked, that no matter what you did, you couldn't change history because it's written. And in this story, it kind of all got turned on its head, where you can change history, and just that you shouldn't, not that you can't. So with the monk trying to change human history so that they develop much earlier, and the doctor determining to stop him, that's a completely new concept to the series and really changes the philosophy, because you had a new producer coming in who was kind of already working in that mode, even though Verity was still there for a few stories. You could see John Wiles's influence, because he immediately changed that to, yes, you can interfere with history, and it's a much more interesting story that way, rather than, oh, you just can't do it. This story's a lot of fun, and there are a lot of interesting concepts of time in it, and so forth. So, it's a really cool one. I've always loved it. It's one of my absolute favorites, and I give it 4.5 TARDISes for the episodes and 4.5 TARDISes for the book. The novelization is really good and very, very faithful to the televised episodes without being just repetitive. It doesn't add a whole lot to it. Might have changed a couple little things here and there, but for the most part, it's very, very faithful. And the audiobook also gets 4.5 TARDISes out of 5. So it's a wonderful finish to what was a wonderful season. Maybe the best Hartnell season. I also, as uneven as it is, I also really enjoy season 3. Season 1, of course, is solid. All 3 seasons of Hartnell's are pretty solid. There are some missteps in season 3 for sure, but we'll get to that one when we get to that. And I might take a little break, and then in a couple of episodes we'll come back to my look at season 3. But for now, there's season 2 in a nutshell. Overall, it's a very solid season. Of course, it's coming out on Blu-ray soon, one of the big box sets, the next big set, coming out apparently in November, kind of what we're getting hinted at now, probably going to hit the first, within the first half of November, we will get the limited edition box set in the UK, and of course, released probably within a few months here in America. There's already pre-orders for it on Amazon, so you can pre-order the American version, or you can pre-order the British version on Amazon.co.uk, which that's where I pre-ordered mine. So, because I like the boxes, I've really come to like the big limited edition box sets, the UK versions. They're packed full of really nice goodies, and I like the packaging and everything, so that I'm getting mine. I've already pre-ordered mine. Some fans had kind of complained that the price was a little bit more, but you got to realize those seasons were twice as long as the ones in the 70s and 80s, and certainly twice as long as like Sylvester McCoy's era, because they were doing, you know, like almost 40 episodes a year. So the show ran like 10 months out of the year back in the 60s. So it's 9 stories, and they're really packed, you know. So Of course, it's going to cost a little bit more to bring these stories into the box sets. So it wasn't that much more. So, you know, I got it for like £49, I think it was, which isn't bad. You know, that was just like $54 or something in American. Somewhere in that area, $54, $55, which is pretty close to what I pay for them anyway. So you probably want to get it when it first releases if you're going to get that version, because that's probably going to be one that's going to go sky high in a year or two, and it's going to be very sought after, I do believe, and for good reason. It's a solid season. I can't wait for the limited edition set, and I will review it here on QHOO when I do get it later in the year. But it looks like we are definitely getting it before the holiday season, and I can't wait. But that's pretty much it for this week. Thank you guys for tuning in. Hope you're enjoying QHOO, and you know, we do other shows, of course, DRE, original shows, and those will be coming out soon, and I'll be doing a DBB real soon to update you on that kind of stuff. But next time we'll talk about some other things, Classic Who related on this show, and hopefully you will enjoy that. And so until then, you guys know the drill. Stay tuned.
You have been listening to a fan production for Dream Realm Enterprises. This is a not-for-profit program.